are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday, Tuesday, casual Tuesday, Wednesday, casual hump day, Thursday, casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, July 19th, 2019. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA.
You're trying to say it the old way?
Today, Ben Dixon. The Benjamin Dixio. Also on the program, House votes to raise the minimum wage. Donald Trump disavows himself and his racism. Anthony Scalia's son nominated for labor secretary. The good news? He did not give a sweetheart deal to a child sex trafficker. Meanwhile, DOJ prosecutors once again decide to not charge the president in the hush money crime because the president is above the law. Also on the program today, Trump wants to zero out refugee admissions to the country. And Trump's EPA has got no problem with a pesticide that causes slight neurological disorders in children. 500 troops to Saudi Arabia and Sean Hannity's bid for war with Iran. Meanwhile, Iran offering inspections for another nuke deal. And the lineup for the next Democratic debate is out. And lastly, John Delaney's own paid staff says, fire us. All this and more on today's program. Getting a little bit of feedback, Brendan. I'm not sure exactly why. Sending some stuff back to me, but I think we should be all right. Obviously, quite a crazy week this week, ladies and gentlemen. I'm getting a little bit, you're sending a little bit of a signal back to me, Brendan. I don't know what's going on with that. You there?
Yep.
Okay. Crazy week this week. Now I can't hear myself. This is weird. All right. Yeah, don't do that. A lot of stuff to cover this week. And I'm getting a feedback now again, Brendan. Are you there?
I'm here. I don't. Okay. Your zip is up.
Okay.
Everything's normal on our end.
Okay. All right. Well, be that as it may, we're getting a little bit of feedback, but I'll be all right. Crazy week. The Democrats, of course, have passed the minimum wage. It doesn't mean much, but it's good. I don't know why Nancy Pelosi is excited about something that's going to die in the Senate when that has been such a problem in the context of impeachment, but I guess in this context, it doesn't really matter. Let's go here. Well, let's play this sound. Donald Trump apparently is disavowing everything he had to say the other night at the campaign rally.
Mr. President, if I may, when your supporters last night were chanting, send her back, why didn't you stop them? Why didn't you ask them to stop saying that?
Well, number one, I think I did. I started speaking very quickly. It really was a loud, I disagree with it, by the way, but it was quite a chant. And I felt a little bit badly about it. But I will say this, I did, and I started speaking very quickly. But it started up rather fast, as you probably noticed.
There you go.
Rather fast.
I was talking, I really felt bad about it.
What happened was it was so fast in the auditorium. And they were speaking about the Jews in a way that was so extra.
Yeah, they got way out in front of me.
That's what it was. It's almost like we were supposed to wait on that a couple of months.
Meanwhile, it's not just, you know, Donald Trump doesn't, it's not Donald Trump's problem. It's also, it's his followers that are the problem here. Here's a clip of a Geraldo trying to defend him. It's clip number four.
Go back to where you came from is the old racist trope that all of us ethnic or racial minorities have grown up with at various times. It is unforgivable at this day and age, and I really lament that it came up. I'm glad the president has said what he said, and I think that the crowds, if you love this president, then don't ever do that again at one of his rallies, because what you do is you diminish him. He is the glue that holds our republic together. He is the man that makes E Pluribus Unum work out of many one. We cannot ever fall back into that lazy kind of the other that we did for several days.
There you go.
To be
the problem is his followers.
I don't want to say to be, I hate the phrase, in fact, to be fair, but I in this case, as I watch that with the sort of like, you know, the slobbering over Trump, that to me is the, you know, he gets everything from Fox, please stop doing this message. Not, you know.
Are you saying Geraldo is
yeah,
sending that message to?
That's my interpretation. I have no brief for Geraldo, but that's how I read that.
I think Trump, it's impressive that Trump walked it back, because you know he enjoyed it.
Loved it, of course.
It's shocking. It's shocking. Super disturbing. We'll talk more about that with Ben Dixon. Hey, folks, whether it's a trail of muddy footprints or a pile of dishes after your first barbecue, nothing cleans this like the spring scents from Grove. Grove delivers natural brands you'll love, like Mrs. Meyers, 7th Generation, Burt's Bees. Grove straight to your doorstep. And everything is healthier for you and the planet. Plus, it really works. I get a bunch of that. Most of the stuff that we have, the non-scented hand washing stuff that we have in the office, I get it all from Grove.
Yep.
What's the name of that? What is it? Is it 7th Generation or what is that?
I think that was Meyers. One.
No, I don't think it's Mrs. Meyers. I'm not sure which one Method. It is, but we get it all from the Grove. Now, listeners can take advantage of this exclusive spring offer. When you place your first order of $20, get a free three-piece cleaning set in your favorite limited edition scent, peony, lilac, or mint. I would go with mint. I'm not going to do the lilac or
Same.
The peony. You know the problem with that.
Same.
That includes Mrs. Meyers Spring Hand Soap, a Mrs. Meyers Spring Dish Soap, a Mrs. Meyers Spring Multi-Surface Spray, a Grove Collaborative Cleaning Caddy, and a Grove Collaborative Walnut Scrubber Sponges. Plus, get a 60-day VIP membership as well as a surprise bonus gift. Just go to grove.co/majority to sign up and place an order of $20 or more. That's grove.co, not com. .co/majority, grove.co/majority. And also, folks, as you know, it can be hard to find the time to sit down, read a book, and learn more. But there's an app that can change that. It's called Blinkist. Blinkist is the only app that takes the best key takeaways, the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books, condenses them down to just 15 minutes for you to read or listen to. Blinkist is made for busy people like you who want to get the main points quickly without reading the entire book. And its audio feature, Blinkist, makes it easy to finish a book during your commute, on your lunch break, or while you exercise. In fact, 10 million people are using Blinkist right now. It has a massive and growing library from self-help to business to health and history books. I mean, for me, I love it because I don't have time to read, particularly, you know, like the self-help books. You don't need all the sinew.
No.
You want to go straight for the bones.
Straight to the bone. Give me efficiency in my efficiency.
I don't need the prose. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist, and Michael has really gotten down a four-hour work week. Hell, from Tim Ferriss.
Oh, you know what? I can't even indulge in that joke because if only it were so.
I think you feel like you've got it down to like a quarter hour work week.
A quarter hour work week.
Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/majority to start your free 7-day trial. That's Blinkist, spelled Blinkist.com/majority to start your free 7-day trial. Blinkist.com/majority. You get titles like, check out some of these titles. 7 Habits of Highly Effective People.
Hello.
How to Win Friends and Influence People. I should probably
There you go. Yep, that's yours. Fast track that, Sam.
The Power of Habits. Factfulness. 10 Reasons We're Wrong About the World. And Why Things Are Better Than You Think. Fire and Fury. That's the one I got to check out. All right. Look, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Ben Dixon will be with us.
Sam, are you still getting feedback?
Yes. I don't know what the problem is. It's a real problem. Everything is down on your end. The auxiliary in the monitor is not sending back to me. Wherever the zip is, get rid of the auxiliary and monitor. You know what I'm talking about? Brendan, can you hear me? Okay. Do you know what I'm saying with the auxiliary and the monitor? On the phone, it's a pleasure to welcome to the program the proprietor of the Benjamin Dixon Show, Ben Dixon. Ben, welcome to the program.
Sam, thanks for having me, man. It's always a pleasure.
I have no idea where to start this week, Ben.
It's been a week.
It seems like ages ago, but the week started off with Mike Pence basically parading in front of a room full of caged men, inspecting the tower. I mean, can you believe that was only 5-6 days ago?
I honestly thought I would have thought that was 2 or 3 weeks ago by now.
And it was almost I think it was the launch of the 2020 campaign for the Trump administration. And they rolled out all of the various, I guess, shades of racism that they have in their arsenal. And by the end of the week, I think we basically saw the entire campaign play out.
Yeah, I have to agree. This is definitely the way that they're going to run the entire campaign. And what's so wild about this, Sam, is that a couple of things. Number one, it's effective. It's going to work to a certain degree. Now, whether or not he wins, that remains to be seen. But it rallies his base. And the Republicans who might feel a little squeamish about it, they go along with it. And so it's really his path towards victory if we're not careful. The other side about it is it's so potent that it does have the potential of dividing the country in a way that we've never seen in our lifetimes. And he seems to have no remorse whatsoever, not even an afterthought about what this type of campaign will do to democracy here in this country.
Oh, God, no. I mean, we'll play this clip later. I don't know if you saw this clip of Trump talking to this Yazidi woman, Nadia Murad, and it's. I mean, this guy doesn't care at all.
No.
And and what I think is really sort of stunning is how little it appears that the rest of the Republican Party does. I mean, we're talking hundreds of lawmakers, and you got, I think, what we have, four people who voted with the Democrats on this condemnation, and I think that was before the rally, wasn't it? Ben, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're breaking up a little bit.
I am here, Sam.
I think that was before the rally, wasn't it?
Yeah, I do believe that was before the rally. The fascinating thing about this one, Sam, is that is that the Republicans not only are going along with it, but they're doubling down on it. Like Lindsey Graham, right? For instance, Lindsey Graham is doubling down on Donald Trump's ignorance and on his bigotry. And we're finding that like throughout rank and file Republicans who would have at least in 2016, prior to 2016, they would have at least tried to give the appearance of not being outright open bigots. But now Donald Trump has provided sufficient cover for them to just live their best racist lives.
I don't know. It's pretty stunning. And we had an attempt to, I guess, impeach the president or start impeachment proceedings. I guess this is on Wednesday now. I don't know. Time is completely dilated for me. But it was the motion for impeachment was tabled, essentially. It was a procedural vote, and it basically, put it to the side. I have a feeling they'll come back and take another bite at that apple a little bit later. On some level, it's a scary scenario. We're 15 months out. One can only imagine. You know, he's got to escalate this, right? I mean, he's going to, because, I mean, that's just the nature of the way that Trump works. And I feel like for years, I've been telling people it's going to get worse before it gets better. And I still think that that's the case.
Yes, it was hard to imagine, right? With some of the things that Donald Trump was pulling over the last couple of years, it was hard to imagine how it could get worse. But with this, with the launch of this campaign, he has... I don't know. He's really found the one way that we could rip ourselves apart at the seams. Like I cut an entire I did a video this week and I cut an entire portion out because I didn't want to seem too grim or too fatalistic. But I cut the portion out because I really said I don't know how we come back from this. Like, how do we as a nation come back from what Donald Trump is getting ready to do with us? And that was Monday. I had no idea that the week was going to get so much worse. I should have just left it in there because really that's the question. If Donald Trump goes all the way with the campaign, the way he's talking right now, I don't know how we come back as a nation.
Yeah. There's going to be a lot of, I don't know either, to be honest with you. I mean, I think that on some level, it's just a matter of the idea here has to be that, they are just simply defeated, right? Like, I mean, I keep waiting for a broader, and maybe it's there, but I don't know how durable it is. I mean, it sort of feels like there has been a palpable shift in the media and in the mainstream understanding of not just Donald Trump, but of the Republican Party? I don't know. I mean, do you feel that's the case?
Sam, I lost you there for a second. I didn't catch that question. Do you mind repeating?
I was asking if you thought there has been like a palpable change in the media or the media's perception, I think, of the Republican Party.
I don't know. That's a difficult one. Like I would like to think that this week opened the eyes of at least a handful of journalists. But this week they had Richard Spencer on CNN, right? Jake Tapper had him on his show. So I'm not really sure if the change is positive, right? You would think that it would be positive. There's some journalists who have come out and expressly calling what Donald Trump is. They're calling it for what it is. But I'm not sure that the institutions, the media institutions, are going to play the role that they need to play. I think they're still trying to be quote unquote fair and balanced, and inevitably leaning towards fascism because they're giving Donald Trump cover in so many ways.
We had another situation where the prosecutors apparently in the hush money to the paid during the campaign. Apparently, Donald Trump, it was released, was on the phone calls about Stormy Daniels. And the prosecutors have now, you know, basically it's clear that to the extent that they decided not to bring charges, it was a function of this DOJ, internal ruling, essentially, their assessment from the Office of Legal Counsel. Remember, this is the same office, incidentally, that said torture's legal, right? And on some level. And I imagine that this is the assessment of the DOJ. It's never been tested at the Supreme Court. And I don't know who would have standing necessarily to bring this question to the Supreme Court. I imagine we won't find out until there's a Democratic president and the Republicans try and do this. But there's been different times where I feel like over the past couple of years and certainly, you know, after the first like month or two, I was a little bit less concerned. But you start to really see the creakiness in our system. And, you know, this week after Donald Trump came out and made those statements about Ilhan Omar, Bill Barr came out and said basically the exact same thing in much more, I guess, polite words. And I don't know if you saw that, but of Bill Barr coming out and doing that and basically saying, like, I am Donald Trump. I am defending Donald Trump, the individual, not the institution of the president. It really starts to make me wonder just, you know, sort of how smooth a transition of power could be in this situation. I mean, I know this kind of talk is a little bit there. It's very easy to slip into some measure of hyperbole. And when other people have articulated this to me in the past, I've been a little bit, I've dismissed it pretty easily, but you start to see this stuff and we're 18 months out, and it looks a little difficult. What's your sense of that?
Yeah, so that you really, my big question this entire week has been, how does America absorb this? How do we adjust for this? How do we compensate for this type of leadership? Because we see now the creaks that you mentioned that are in our system. Donald Trump was uniquely fit to exploit them. Anyone who has just complete disregard for our norms and our institutions, the rule of law, and they're able to win the presidency, they're able to exploit all of these weaknesses in our democracy. Couple that with individuals who are more loyal to the individual man than they are the institutions and the nation as a whole. I mean, it is the perfect combination for chaos. And this is, when I say chaos, I mean a chaotic transition of power, like you mentioned. But this is pre-campaign. Like, he just launched the campaign this week. Can you imagine all of those factors compounded with the type of campaign that he looks like he's getting ready to run? And I mean, I don't want to lean towards hyperbole. I don't want to be a scaremonger. But I mean, it could get really ugly for America. And we have a president who has zero regard for the type of chaos that he could cause for America.
Let's talk a little bit about the presidential campaign, because, you know, at this point, if and I just don't know how I don't know how Nancy Pelosi continues to justify this, frankly,
mm-hmm.
but that, you know, we're not going to see any legislation get passed, any legislation
right.
that we, you know, are hopeful about. There may be some small things. I think there's some bipartisan agreement on the do not call registry thing. And that's. That's good to see, right? And Chuck Schumer, I think, is going to be able to maybe get us another inch and a half on the in our leg room in our planes. That's not bad. Really, it's, you know, presidential politics take on an even greater import, I think, on some level. I mean, obviously, people are going to have to get into the streets at one point if it continues on this way. And I think, like, you know, organizing is hugely important, probably more important. But this stuff is it's fascinating. There was a poll that came out, NBC News Survey Monkey. And the national numbers weren't particularly, you know, shocking. They've been consistent with what we've started to see in terms of a trend. Biden at 25%, Sanders and Warren at 16%, Harris at 14%, Buttigieg at 3 and then at 8 rather, and then O'Rourke, Booker, Yang, Castro at 3 and 2%. But here's what's interesting in terms of the breakdown of race. For white people, Warren is at 22%, Biden's at 21%. Then Harris and Sanders are tied at 15%. For black people, Biden's at 37%. Harris and Sanders are tied at 14%. Booker and Warren at 5%. I mean, I got to think on some level that as Donald Trump attacks, like, just becomes more and more racist. And, you see these chants like send her home, right? Or send her back or whatnot, that this could be helpful to a Joe Biden insofar as the there's got to be, like, you know, I mean, I think a big part of Biden's support has got to be A, an association with Barack Obama.
For sure.
And B, a perception that he is the safest choice in some way. I don't happen to agree with this, but that he might be the safest choice. And, you know, for people of color in this country, you start to get into, like, this is an existential issue at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. I don't agree that he's the best choice to beat Trump.
I agree.
I think the argument there falls apart really easily when you see what Donald Trump is able to do with Joe Biden's history. No one is going to have an easy road against Donald Trump. Right. Let's just start there. The third factor, I think, I mean, you nailed the first two. I think the third factor is that Joe Biden really represents to a lot of people going back to normalcy. And I think that's fallacious, too, because there is no going back to a normal state after this. Right. What Donald Trump has done to the country has irrevocably moved us in a detrimental direction, but definitely towards the right. I mean, if we there is no going back to normal when he has had over 100 judicial picks that are all probably sycophants, right? His impact on the Supreme Court, his impact on the national discourse, like there really is no going back to normal. So if people are looking for Joe Biden to be the safe bet and the bet to take us back to normal, I think that's a really bad bet. And I think the primaries are going to flesh that out for us. I think we're going to see a lot more. Biden's not going to survive for a whole lot longer. That's just maybe I'm wishful thinking here, but I'm counting on the primaries to really flesh this out for us.
Yeah, I think that's that's my sense too. I just wonder that, you know, I don't know that a lot of Biden support. I mean, you know, we're still in a time period where people haven't necessarily fully engaged in the primary, and so I think it's easy for people to have those assumptions about Biden because he was the vice president.
Right.
They released the lineups for the next Democratic debate. I missed the, I don't know what you call it, the lottery that CNN did or whatever it was. But on night one, Marianne Williamson, Tim Ryan, Amy Klobuchar, then Beto O'Rourke, John Hickenlooper, John Delaney, who's, incidentally, it's being reported now that his own staff has basically said, fire us by August.
Yeah.
And Steve Bullock. So basically, nobody's, and Pete Buttigieg, Bernie Sanders, and Elizabeth Warren. And let's just start with that. What kind of dynamic do you think that's going to create? I mean, my sense is that Warren and Sanders, it's too early for them to go at each other, but maybe that's not the case. Yeah. What do you think is going to happen there?
I'd be surprised if they went after each other because they both of them in the first debate, they both made an impact, but they both sat back and allowed everyone else to kind of mess over each other, which is a pretty good tactic, in my opinion. They had a strong opening and then they sat back a little bit. I don't see that they're ready to go head to head against each other because that's going to be a net benefit for like Buttigieg in that kind of scenario. So I think we may see again where they're both going to make strong statements. They may have one skirmish between the two of them, but I don't think it's going to devolve into anything that's going to give someone like Mayor Pete an advantage in that debate. So other than those two, that it really, Marianne Williamson. I do have to say this about her. Like, as much as I'm not in favor of her campaign and I'm really not a fan of the spiritual guru types, right, I really do appreciate her running, if for no other reason than what she did to Dave Rubin on his own show. That was worth it all.
Yes, I think that's absolutely the case. That was definitely worth watching. I'll tell you something. This first night is going to be fascinating, I think, because almost everybody on that stage, except for Marianne Williamson and Pete Buttigieg, let's put them aside for a moment. But when you talk Tim Ryan, Amy Klobuchar, Beto O'Rourke, John Hickenlooper, John Delaney, and Steve Bullock, they're all going to go at Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren on ideological grounds, right? And this is going to give, I think, both Sanders and Warren, and particularly Sanders, because he has the most distinct ideology, at least from a rhetorical standpoint, from Warren, right? I mean, she has made it clear that she's a full-throated capitalist, but obviously needs some reform. Sanders is saying that we need a political revolution. This is going to be, I think, a huge opportunity for the left of the Democratic Party.
Yes.
Because
absolutely,
they couldn't go against, you know, here's the thing. Sanders doesn't want to go directly at Joe Biden in the first debate because some of Biden's supporters have to come to Sanders at one point.
Right.
But they're going to be on stage with people who between 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of them, they don't even have, I think, 10% of the vote.
Right.
And
yeah.
So he's going to go up there, and Warren, I imagine, to some extent as well. And they're going to have to, they're going to have to defend the left. And I think they're going to want to do actually even more than that. I think they're going to take this as an opportunity to really explain why we cannot go back to the era of John Delaney and whatnot. And there's no cost for them to go at these guys, not necessarily as individuals. There's no point, right? But to go at their ideology, because they will all be surrogates for Joe Biden.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, that's a great way of looking at it. And I also see this really may be the end of the road for a couple of those names.
Yep.
It's particularly John Delaney. Like, I do see he really believes what he says. And even though he's completely wrong, he believes it enough to jump out there. And that's going to be the perfect opportunity, like you already said. That's going to be the perfect opportunity for Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren to just kind of make some hay, both for the left as well as clearing the field. So I wouldn't be surprised if after this debate, we see a couple of those people from night one drop out.
Yeah, I agree with you. And the other, I guess, you know, point that needs to be made about that, every single person on that stage on the first night will be white.
On
the second night, we have Joe Biden, then Kamala Harris, Cory Booker, Julian Castro, Andrew Yang, Tulsi Gabbard, Jay Inslee, Bill de Blasio, and Michael Bennett, and Kristen Gillibrand. And that's also going to be a fascinating night because I would imagine the theme of Joe Biden talking about how nice it was to have segregationists and this notion that, you know, everything's going to return to normal, right? That's Joe Biden's Biden's pitch, that I'm going to return things to normalcy. And I have a feeling, I would hope, that half of the people on that stage, three quarters, are going to say to Joe Biden, what makes you think after watching what we saw this week and the reaction in the polls, let's say, to things like, that you're going to return this to normal? Like, what makes you think that we don't have a big divide in this country right now?
I think something else that's going to be exposed specifically because of that dynamic, right? The racial tension, the racial dynamic. Night two, you have all the people of color versus Joe Biden. I think that night is going to expose that Joe Biden is not as tough as people like to imagine that he is. He's not that skilled of a debater. He's not as quick on his toes as he's going to need to be to go up against Donald Trump. If Donald Trump is nothing else, he is a witty, he's witty with his comebacks. He can come back and really make you pay the price for saying something stupid, right? And we're going to see that on night two. I think once people get a hold of Joe, because everyone's going to come after Joe, they have nothing to lose, everything to gain. And I don't think Joe is going to be in a position where he can stand his ground, where he can actually make some hay out of it, like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren would do for night one. So I think it's going to be a good night for America to really see yet again that Joe Biden is not up to the task. He's not the best bet to go up against Donald Trump. I couldn't even think of that guy's name for a second. It's been that crazy of a week.
Yeah, it's going to be I think these are both really interesting sort of slates, to be honest with you. I mean, I suppose it could work that way. I would like to see at one point Warren with Biden, because Warren, has a particular portfolio that that Joe. I mean, I think Joe Biden was one of the reasons why she got into politics. I mean, like electoral politics on some level, because of that bankruptcy bill. But this is a very good situation, I think, from the perspective of people who are of the left in the Democratic Party, because we're going to see an opportunity for Sanders and Warren to go full throated against the establishment politics, the Hickenlooper, John Delaney, Bullock politics, and the sort of the emptiness on some level of the rhetoric of Buttigieg and O'Rourke, although, you know, Buttigieg, I think, is far more adept at this stuff and maybe even has more substance than O'Rourke does. But it's going to be interesting to see. Then they're all going to come for Warren and Sanders. I mean, all of them. But I don't know. This week has really left me I think more speechless than I've been in ages. Like I just the relentlessness of it, the nakedness of it, I mean, I suppose it's a good sign that Trump had to walk it back a little bit or pretend it wasn't him. and that they're all on board of this. Yesterday we saw, you know, we saw the beginning of the week, Fox and Friends, because this is like and I don't want to elevate the importance of Fox and Friends in the context of American politics, but when you want to get a sense of what the sort of like the center of the right, the hard right's softest margins are, that's Fox and Friends, right? Like that's like their, it's like the, it's like, you know, the, it's almost like their cooking show on some level. And it's the soft ed and the way that, you know, they started off the week saying that Donald Trump was being really comedic with his tweets.
Yeah.
And then they described the chant of send her back as like things got a little raucous and they were blowing, you know, like we're at a stage now where it sort of feels like, you know, they're not full-throatedly denouncing this stuff.
They're sort of
like keeping the door open to go further. And
yes, exactly.
I get this sort of like feeling that, you know, 6 months from now, they're instead of saying it was the crowd that just did this chant, they're going to say, well, I mean, let's face it. If she doesn't like it here, they should go back.
Right. I mean, think about this now. Newt Gingrich, former Speaker of the House, was on Fox News saying that exact thing. Right. So this is I'm not impressed by there was nothing to be impressed by. But the fact that he walked it back just an inch, that's his MO. Like if he does something ridiculous, he will come back an inch and then watch next week. He's going to run a full mile on us and go in the opposite direction. Right. So his you know, excuse that the crowd got out of control or whatever. Next week, he himself is probably going to double down on this because that's what he's done in the past. But that speaks to another problem, Sam. There is no more normal when so many of the Republicans in this country actually not only identify with what Donald Trump is doing, but are willing to go even further than Donald Trump is presently willing to go. So for anyone who thinks that we could just go back to normal without actually addressing these issues in a substantive and almost combative fashion, we've got a fight. We've got a serious fight on our hands. And part of the fight is not just economic. Yes, we do have economic issues that we absolutely must address. We have to go towards the left. We need social policies. We need Medicare for all. Hell, we need universal basic income. We need a lot of different things. But we have to fight the culture wars, because this is where billionaires are pouring all of their money into. All these people you see on YouTube, the Ben Shapiro's, the Dave Rubens, they're getting funded to fight the culture war. And we're seeing the result of that, not only from the YouTube contingency, obviously the decades long experiment or the two decades long experiment of Fox News. It has all been about the culture war. And we have a significant portion of this country that not only buys into what Donald Trump is saying, they want him to go further. And there's no going back to normal if you're not ready to fight that head on. There's only a new normal that can be had after this.
Well, you know, Andrew Breitbart, who, you know, folks like Shapiro was spawned of, I guess, on some level. And of course, you know, Bannon came in and was more or less a partner of his, the Mercers. Breitbart's big cri de coeur, I guess, was that politics is downstream from culture. And part of that was just because of his own resentment that, you know, the guys in Hollywood didn't want to hang out with him. You saw it with Ben Shapiro, you know, had interest in becoming a screenwriter in Hollywood and then, you know, obviously couldn't because he's conservative. And that's why he couldn't get a job. But I think this is increasingly the case. Right. And I agree with you. I think it's becoming there is so much of our politics is this culture war. They have been able to sort of activate more and more on the right. I mean, because this is Pat Buchanan was calling for this in 1993. Yeah. He was calling for it when on some level it worked under Nixon. Right. I mean, that was Pat Buchanan's whole thing. We're going to split the country in half and we've got the bigger half is what he said at the time. And it worked then, you know, maybe it's becoming more extreme or more naked only in relief on some level that there is, you know, in the sense that, like, I don't know that attitudes were worse in 1972. It may be just that on the, you know, to the center, to the left, attitudes are better. And so there's a higher consciousness of this stuff. Or maybe they're getting more extreme because, you know, they're feeling that power diminish. I don't know. I mean,
I mean, the slightest amount of power loss and they swear they are the most oppressed people in the history of all oppression. But never mind the fact that they're in power almost throughout the entire country. Can you imagine if white conservative men actually became marginalized community? They would be in the streets burning stuff down every single day. But to your point, I don't know that they're actually worse, but I do think that they're more indifferent towards. Well, actually, let me start that over. I think there are less social ramifications because their reward structure, they have an entire reward infrastructure that actually rewards them for this type of behavior. I don't think that infrastructure was there as much in the 70s or the 80s where you could, maybe you don't win an elected office, but you get yourself a nice commentary job making $300,000 a year if you can go out and say the most salacious and outrageous thing. So now they can be rewarded for their bigotry in a way that we went through a slight period. I mean, it was really just a really brief period in American history where you would be penalized for your open bigotry. I think we're in a place now where you could be rewarded because that country that they divided in half has all types of spoils to give to them.
Do you think that what we're looking at is, you know, 50 years ago, let's say 40 years ago, let's just peg it around the mid to late 60s. There was all sorts of structural support but also institutional support, right, for racism, for white supremacy, legal support and institutional support. The legal support for white supremacy, for the most part, right, not necessarily in practice, but in terms of the letter of the law, although that's been rolled back with the Voting Rights Act, and other things, but the legal support for white supremacy is diminished relative to where it was 40, 50 years ago. The institutional support is probably diminished in some areas, maybe across the board, but it's still pretty prominent in some other areas, like policing, for instance, and the carceral state. And on some level, that white people / the Republican Party. Honestly, that's simply a factual description of the Republican Party. Are trying to regain what they lost from a legal perspective and perhaps an institutional perspective in a cultural perspective.
Yes. Okay, I think I pieced it together. You're saying what they lost institutionally, they're trying to make up culturally, right? And I think that they've done that. They are successful in that they have a system. I mean, we talk about this all the time. They have a structure where they could take a no-name nobody and they can elevate them to national prominence in a matter of a few days, you know? And so they have the cultural impact. They have the structure. They don't have institutions. They don't have legal institutions anymore, but they do have private institutions. They do have think tanks. They have outlets like PragerU and the Heritage Foundation, you know, all these organizations. I mean, countless organizations that can enrich someone and reward them for being able to make inroads in the culture war. If they can find right now, their latest move is the move towards collecting all of their people of color to do this work, right? Because that's far more powerful than a white person doing all of this is to have a person of color. So right now they have a Muslim who will go out and deride Islam. They have a black woman who will go out and deride black people. I mean, they have, so that is what they're making their inroads through, and that's how they're making it. And I think that they see the value that even if we can't legally discriminate, or even if we can't legally suppress, because really what this is about is protecting that white male power structure that Bill O'Reilly and John McCain were talking about on Fox News some years ago. It's really about insulating that power structure. And if they can't do it legally, they have found a way to do it culturally.
Right. Well, next week's another week. I'm sure it's going to be just as horrible.
I can't believe that that visit, that Mike Pence's visit was this week. I have to go back and Google that, because you're right. Time dilation is hitting us seriously right now. I think those face app where everyone aged themselves and gave their information to the Russians. I think it really is far more accurate than we really want to believe because of the pace of our news cycle.
I feel like I've aged. Well, I'm old, but I feel like I've aged even more rapidly over the past, I don't know, 12 months.
For sure.
Michael, are you going to?
No, I'm going to say, Sam, you have been. You haven't, my friend.
Well, I appreciate that, Mike. I appreciate that. Even though I know it's not true, man. I've aged so much. Man, this last 2 years have been really rough. And I think it's been rough on a lot of American people. We're going to have some PTSD treatment for most of Americans once we get past and get past this Trump stage and get to the new normal. We're going to have to adjust.
But I don't think that's going to happen, right? I mean, like, I think there's going to be a couple of months, but then I think Tom Cotton or whoever it is going to come back. And I don't think getting rid of Trump, it will maybe make it less telegenic on some level for a brief period of time, but I don't think this goes away. I think it's going to take some dramatic change, and it's going to need dramatic change and time.
Can I run one quick thing by you guys?
Yeah,
I think that this is another reason why, very specifically, we're still in the primary, but hopefully we'll never get to this point. But I think one of the things that's also so specifically destructive about Biden is, one, I think he could team up with Republicans to do things like cut Social Security and Medicare, which we've talked about.
Yeah.
And two, because I think he will be probably more than any other candidate on a continuum, a willing co-participant in these people taking a couple years to launder themselves and pretend they didn't do all this. Incidentally, before we get to 2022 and 2024, when they restart it up again. But he will be exactly the one to be like, yep, come to the White House. I know that was a weird aberration. And let's just pretend you weren't willing co-participants for this whole journey. Yeah.
We could have pulled this the other day, but Mark Sanford was on Chris Hayes the other night. And Mark Sanford is contemplating a presidential run against Trump.
Against Chris Hayes.
And against Chris Hayes. And he said, he sort of implied this at first, and then Hayes asked him directly. He said the number one challenge facing this country right now is the deficit and debt. And Hayes was like, "Wait, are you serious? Are you seriously saying that?" And he goes, "Yes." And then Hayes said, "Like, you guys are just going to pretend like that's the case when a Democrat gets in office, and the whole cycle is going to start over again." And I'm quite convinced of that. I mean, there was a story, Rush Limbaugh. I was reading somehow. Stumbled onto Reason magazine. Rush Limbaugh was basically saying, like, yeah, don't worry about spending. That was just a trap that we set for the Democrats. Yeah. And he's going to snap back the moment, Bernie Sanders is elected, or Elizabeth Warren is elected, or Pete Buttigieg is elected. They're immediately going to be like, the deficit and debt is the biggest problem that we have. It's going to be Weimar Germany and et cetera, et cetera.
And that's Biden will let them do. And I put Buttigieg on the side of that equation as well. I think Buttigieg will do that as well. Yep. Let them launder it.
Yep.
And this is why we have to have, there has to become a new normal, right? So when I say get past Trump, I mean, we can get past Trump and go right back to the way things were. And because we don't have the infrastructure on the left, hell, not even the Democratic Party, as powerful as they are, they don't have the infrastructure to command the news cycles and to command the discourse the way Republicans do. Yeah. And so if we go back to normal, it will be exactly that. I mean, Republicans will just reset their 20-year cycle. And here we are. We're going to be fighting about deficits. But we have to get to a new normal, which is going to include shattering this entire notion of Republicans being fiscally conservative and shattering the notion that we have to worry about deficits, because we've never worried about deficits underneath Republicans in the first place. And coupled with that has to be someone who's willing to fight the culture war on a level that can help us reset this. Because if not, the Tom Cottons can come in the future. Right. But if we don't put some find a way to make it socially unacceptable to be this open bigot and run these bigoted campaigns with loud dog whistles, with bullhorns, then we will just keep going further and further down this slippery slope towards fascism.
I think it's that's why it's so important that, you know, at this point, the project largely has to be to make sure that Donald Trump and the Republican Party are synonymous, that
yes.
there is no and you know, not even argue necessarily that the Republicans lack fiscal discipline, because I don't think that should be the fight. I think the point
yeah.
is that they're the Republican Party is it's broken. It is not a political party. This conservative movement is largely, I think, just authoritarianism. And there doesn't seem to be any type of rational set of ideology that doesn't really involve, you know, the xenophobia and the racism. You know, they're, you know, you don't hear people cheering like, we want wages, or we want jobs, or economic development, right? I mean, it is misogyny, it is racism, it's xenophobia,
yeah.
And you strip that away, there's just not much there, and it's also at best a willingness to exploit these things for massive corporate giveaways.
Absolutely. I mean, that's exactly it, Sam.
I think that's a distinction in many respects without a difference. If you're willing to just walk by and parade in front of a cage full of men who haven't, you know, who've been denied showers and a place to sleep for 40 days so that, you know, the EPA can allow
yeah.
you know, pesticide companies to use something for that hurts kids' neurological development. I mean, you're a racist, and on
yeah.
top of that, you know, you're racist plus.
I you know, that is the sheer reality of this. The people in the crowd last whatever night that was, is at this point, the people in that crowd, they may not even be cognizant. Some of them may be beneficiaries of the corporate handouts that Donald Trump has given them, but the majority of them are there because of the fury that Donald Trump is able to rev them up in. And it's hand in hand. It is the what's the matter with Kansas a scenario on meth, right? It's like on steroids, and where now they are clearly free to be their full bigoted selves while their corporate overlords in the background saying this is perfectly fine for us, because now we can gut every safety net, every safety measure, everything that has ever given us progress over the last century. We can gut it while they're out there celebrating their racism.
Yeah, I mean, this, you know, I mean, maybe we need some version of like crypto racism or neo racism or utilitarian racism or something like that to describe, you know, Donald Trump is really a nice guy at heart. He's not really a racist. Mitch McConnell is not really a racist. They're just using racism and misogyny to, you know, provide tax cuts for their people, or to I mean, like, just for the sake of bringing people on board, you know, maybe you need to put like some type of qualifier on the racism so that people feel more comfortable with it. Like, hey, we're not burning crosses on anybody's house. We're just basically exploiting the impetus to do that to achieve corporate aims.
Yeah, I guess my only question with that would be like, who would we win with that argument? Only because they have a full throated acceptance of racism on the right, and then we have kind of this this milquetoast approach from Nancy Pelosi, from Joe Biden. I mean, the centrist Democrats, I don't know that they would even be moved by that argument, just simply because of how they're reacting to Donald Trump. But the sentiment is 100% accurate. I mean, you're absolutely right.
Well, can I just real quick, one other just thing on this? That actually, though, correlates with calling out the disingenuous and trash pseudo identity things that are marshaled by disingenuous Democrats as well, because the whole context of part of the drama with the Twitter account and clearly them trying to get the AOC staffer fired was that he said, if you're a Democrat and you voted for a border funding bill without any accountability for the border system, that is functionally a racist vote, among many other things. And they went to immediately, well, Cherise Davids voted for it, and she's Native American and the most, you know, crass identitarian nonsense. And he responded and he said, well, you can be of color or any identity and, in fact, enable a racist system. And that is actually the deeper point, and that will implicate a lot of Democrats, as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely.
I mean, and that's self-evident, right? I mean, Clarence Thomas.
Well, that's the other thing. Well, they always want to. Well, people want to always.
I'm not saying
the boundary
that Cherise Davis.
I'm not
comparing Cherise Davis, but it's on a sliding spectrum.
Yes.
Right. Like, and there's plenty of data. I mean, this. You know, the we've talked about this. I mean, Eddie Gloud's book, you know, sort of walks through the notion and others that for that matter, that white supremacy is a practice. And it is something that it's not, you know, white supremacy can be practiced by any member of any race. You're conditioned in certain areas. I mean, you have certain other agendas, but it doesn't get worse than what we've seen. Well, let me put it this way. It's yet to have gotten worse than we have seen this week in politics, at least in this, in, you know, the past couple of decades. I think it's I think we're going to see it get worse. So, Ben Dixon, appreciate your time today, buddy. Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. Thanks so much, Sam. Mike, take care.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Good to talk to you. It's actually nice to, thanks for letting me jump in a little bit. I miss talking to Benjamin.
Well, you're welcome, Michael.
Everybody's calm down.
Folks, we're going to head into the fun Post half roll. In a moment. Yes, I've got it right here in my
nice.
Hand. We're going to head into the fun half. I want to remind you this episode brought to you by Blinkist. The Blinkist app takes the key takeaways from thousands of best-selling nonfiction books and condenses them into 15 minutes. You can read them or you can listen to them. You can read like 3 or 4 self-help books just on the treadmill alone. 10 million people are using Blinkist right now. It has a massive and growing library from self-help and business to health and history books. You can read the Fire and Fury.
It's a great. Right? I'm absolutely a wolf defender in the Trump era. It's a great book.
Right now, you can get 25% off your first year at Blinkist. 25% off your first year at Blinkist.com/majority. That's Blinkist.com/majority. All right, folks, just a reminder, this program relies on your support. You can support this program by becoming a member at JoinTheMajorityReport.com. For just pennies a day, support the program. And as a way of saying thank you, we give you extra content every day. We are going to be covering the debates live. That's going to be in 2 weeks, I guess. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. As Dorsey was discussing earlier, check out the AM Quickie. We've been sort of reshaping it. And
do you like how I took that opportunity to turn that into a nice little plug, Sam?
Yeah, that was very well done.
There you go.
The good things rise out of the tech problems.
There you go.
Yeah, folks, check it out. If you have feedback, send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. We have already made changes based on your feedback. We will make more. And it's the show's only going to get better. I mean, we started out and I fully subscribed to that. I mean, part of it's like that Tim Ferriss stuff from Blinkist, where it's just like, do it. Make it perfect later.
Definitely.
That's my new mantra. So I don't have time to make anything perfect anymore. That's basically what I did too with my kids.
Just sort of you know, thank you for doing that, because I was just about to make a parenting joke about you, and I thought that would be a little over the line. So I appreciate that you did it yourself. Thank you.
You're welcome. Because
it needed to be made. It was sitting there.
Yeah, no, I no longer worry about dropping the ball with the kids anymore. I'm just
you know what, Saul? Practice makes further mistakes. Anyways, what are you going to do?
No, I tell them to practice. I just say that, like, I just basically say, like, look, as long as you guys are fed more or less, we're fine. I'm doing a great job.
Sam, I just picked up a copy of I think you just sent me a copy of The Four Stages of Highly Effective Crisis Management, How to Manage the Media in the Digital Age.
I thought it was literally the crisis in the office.
Well, that's the point, I think. That's the joke, and that tells you how to do the feedback loop on the board. Michael, today is Friday. That means that someday during this past week, the Tuesday must have happened.
Tuesday was great. We talked with Daniel Bessner about reinventing human rights, the troubled history of so-called humanitarian intervention going back to the Balkans. I just will say quickly, this Sunday, we have an illicit history of the Communist Party in Sudan and a primer on what's happening there right now with Ahmed Kabello, who's a Sudanese journalist. His father's on the Central Committee of the Sudanese Communist Party. It's fascinating. Next Tuesday, Crystal Ball and Joshua Kahn. Michael Brooks Show on YouTube and patreon.com/TMBS.
Crystal Ball.
Crystal Ball.
I haven't run into her in ages.
Actually, I'll be on her Hill show on Monday morning.
Is it The Hill that
yeah, The Hill has The Hill. She hosts a show, Rising, for The Hill. It's good. It's a good morning. It's not a brief. It's a full morning show. It's a good morning.
Oh, in other
show.
Words, it's not competition with the AM.
Yeah, I was checking myself there for a second, right. But it's
who
very
did she do
distinct.
It with that guy Buck Henry or somebody? Not Buck Henry.
I don't think so. I'm pretty sure it's not.
Matt, you can check out The Antifada, patreon.com/TheAntifada. And you can check out Matt's Literary Hangover on the YouTube channel and at patreon.com/LiteraryHangover. And also, obviously, all those things are available on Stitcher and iTunes. Quick break. Right back with the fun half, 646-257-3920. We're going to take a bunch of calls today.
You are in for it.
All right, folks, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
Are you ready?
Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Back, back, back. Back. And the alpha males are back, back.
Just as delicious as you can imagine.
The alpha males are back, 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 back. And the alpha males are back, 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 back.
Just wanna degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back, back,